The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined in studio by broadcasting legend, Sean O'Rourke, to leaven that praise slightly. He's also the man that Donald Trump described as an a-hole following an interview with him. Before we get to your latest show, Sean, how did you end up getting abused by Donald Trump?
Well, we had a very interesting interview and an exchange, an encounter down in Doonbeg, 2014, the middle of the European elections campaign. And we were doing a couple of OBs, and it turned out that he was visiting Doonbeg, and my good colleague Brian O'Connell had a connection in the hotel. And so we arranged that Trump would, we'd do the show when Trump was around. So we did about maybe 20 minutes live with him. And
accepted live, did he?
We did. Oh, yeah, we did. We were live. And so anyway, I pressed him a few things and... you know, he denied that he'd ever been bankrupt or any of that stuff. But then we got to the hair at the end, and I asked him if it was real. And of course he said it's real. Anyway, he got up and he left. And then we saw him outside afterwards, and we asked him would he join us for a picture, you know, the group of us. And anyway, he said, no, you're not a nice guy. But as it turned, and he just walked off. And then... Brian arranged, and we're heading into dangerous territory here now, arranged for us to play golf on the course afterwards. And
speaking of golf,
we met him somewhere around the fourth, maybe it was the fifth tee box, and he was admiring his property and making plans. He was driving around in a buggy, and he stood and he got off the buggy and he watched us drive off. And again, another piece of his, you know, sort of implausible hyperbole. He looked at my tee shot and he's nice swing. Now, whatever you say about me and golf, I do not have a nice swing. But anyway, we let that go. He had actually mellowed, and he'd actually read me very well or accurately. He said, when I saw the papers this morning and they were making fun of me, this was about the dancers at the bottom of the plane and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he got a cello or a harp. I knew, wasn't it a harp?
Yeah, yeah. There. Anyway, he says, I knew you weren't going to be nice to me. And he was absolutely, I was conscious of the fact that, you know, he'd been given an easy time. And so I just had to kind of keep my distance a little bit. And he was fine about it. He says, if I was you, I'd have done exactly the same thing. And then cut to the Sunday Independent about 6 months later. He actually didn't say Sean O'Rourke is that thing. He said, that radio guy. But of course, I think Brendan O'Connor is the guy to blame because he was the editor of the magazine. So they couldn't say that radio. That's not a headline, but S.O.R. So I was quite perplexed. Or no, I was more than upset. And Richard Crowley says, are you joking? Put it on a T-shirt. So I put it on a business card and I put it on a postcard. But anyway, that's...
No better man than Richard Crowley to see the advantage within. Now, in any of those, because you have obviously interviewed the great and the good over all of the years, do you ever have any trepidation? Do you ever feel pressure to pull a punch?
No, I don't think so. I mean, that's not to say, and I still believe to this day, maybe 30,000 interviews, 120,000 questions, I have yet to do the perfect interview. And I suppose I'm running out of opportunities now. there's a few things still going on that I do. But you'll always think of something you could have done better. Sometimes it's the reverse. You think maybe you've gone in a bit too hard. I mean, I remember there was a complaint against me about in the aftermath of Sean Doherty's death. And we had PJ Mara and we had somebody else. And like one story followed another. And somebody complained to the broadcasting authority, whatever it was, that we were disrespectful. And I thought, actually, the guy was right. But we got a clean, Peter Feeney defended us very effectively. So there was no finding against it. But I figured I could have taken a hit on that one.
You mentioned Sean Doherty. You had the opportunity to be at the pointy end of some of the most interesting political stories in Irish life, whether it be phone tapping, whether it be bribery, whether it be the planning scandals, the tribunals. Is political reporting in current affairs duller and more anodyne? However ethically better it might be, is it less fun as a broadcaster?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, if you're a correspondent, it doesn't really matter what your outlet is. It's much more pressured now than it was in my day, quote unquote, because, you know, in those days, you know, you had, well, a newspaper.
Well, your day isn't that long ago, Sean.
I'm talking about my newspaper days, you know, and when I was a full-time podcast for the Irish Press, you know, you had one deadline a day or two if you were doing something, you know, for the evening press. The bane of your life was phone and copy. You could spend up to 2 hours a night, you know, going through, you know, the Taoiseach, Dr. Fitzgerald, whatever it was. The biggest invention to improve my life, apart from the air fryer, was the fax machine, okay? Because you could suddenly put your thing down and, you know, 2 minutes later it was down in Burkey and you were in the Dáil Bar or whatever. You were on the way home,
because
of course,
genuinely what preceded that was talking copy to a copy taker in the newspaper.
Sometimes you would type it out on the old clackety-clack typewriter and it would go down and, you know, there might be a messenger sent up for you or something. But more often than not. But is it more difficult? No, it's more competitive in one sense. And then social media, of course, has changed everything.
What are the topics? I mean, if you look back to some of the people that you would have been in the series, the Oireachtas TV series that you're doing, if you look at the most recent one, Martin Manser, if you look at the period that he was involved in when he was advising Haughey, you had the most extraordinary, some of it wasn't contemporaneous when it was revealed, but the most extraordinary scandals, the most extraordinary lack of governance and ethics in office. It has to be interesting to find yourself at the cutting edge of uncovering.
Yeah, but I mean, I've had this theory to which, I've subscribed. It's my own theory for the last 40 years that by and large, the media do not know what is going on when it is going on. We find out what people, it suits people to tell us. Now, if there's a coalition government, it's a bit easier. But I bumped into Andy Kenny recently at an event in New Ross. And he was taking particular pride in the fact that the inner core of that cabinet that he led after 2011 up to 2016, there was Michael Noonan himself, Brendan Howland and Eamon Gilmore. They used to meet regularly and they were the key. They were the inner core. He says there was never a single leak from them. And that's how they worked. And there was that level of trust. Noonan, Howland, Gilmore and Kenny. So, but as Malcolm Muggeridge famously said, you know, the media is a bit like, you know, we're like sharks swimming along behind the ship of state, feeding off whatever bits and scraps are thrown overboard. But every so often, the whole ship goes down and we have a right feed then.
The Oireachtas TV series that you're doing is opportune because it allows you to talk to some of the people who would have been intimately involved in some of the major moments in Irish history with the benefit of a little bit of hindsight and less pressure on them. So Noel Dempsey, obviously Noel Dempsey's role so significant in and around the handling of the communications around the crash. Likewise, Martin Manser. Do you find that they give you stuff that they wouldn't at the time? Are they more willing to talk? Are they more
absolutely,
open?
Absolutely. Because, you know, they're not, first of all, they're not revealing any secrets that could affect goings on in government. They're less tied. And they have a different perspective themselves. You know, I mean, they maybe say, well, what was that all about? Or, you know, to use that famous Lanhan phrase on mature reflection or recollection, they see things differently. I mean, we talked about Martin Manser. Martin Manser was an advisor to three Taoiseach, you know, he was the interlocutor between government buildings and Sinn Féin IRA, or, as he said, like the Republican movement. He's very interesting. I mean, just talking about working with Charles Haughey, I happen to have here a document which I'm happy to share with you. It came up. I said to him, how close did he come to resigning during one of those? He said, very closely. And I said, did he write a resignation speech? He says he did. And he gave it to me to work on, right?
And is this the original?
That is the original. I mean, I thought this is kind of quite a moment. And in fairness to the guys in the Oireachtas Broadcasting Unit, the main man there, Donald McKeown, and his editor, Nick McKenna, and the guys, Stephen Sheehy and Sam Assad, the producer, researcher guys, we got it at short notice. We didn't manage to get as much of it into the programme that goes out tonight at 6 o'clock as we had hoped, but we might be able to do it a little edit later. But that particular page that you're holding, right, the second page of it, you know.
So this is in Haughey's hand.
That is in Haughey's hand in
his
fading
resignation.
Fountain pen. And, like,
so I wish to reaffirm that I had no knowledge of
the phone tapping. But then he goes on to say, but I have to accept responsibility. Now you're turning to the page that really matters.
And accordingly, I want to submit my resignation as party leader and request to have the process immediately to elect my successor. So this is him in the wake of phone tapping.
That was in the middle of it all, and the first thing he was denying any. However, As Manser said, you know,
it ain't signed.
There was another, there's document number two, okay, which came a few days later at somewhat greater length. And he said, the crisis has made members and supporters of Fianna Fáil in every part of the country, many of them for the first time, look deeply and anxiously at the very nature and purpose of their party. And it goes on for three or four pages in this vein. But we'll cut through all that. He says, accordingly, I will remain to lead the party forward out of its present difficulties. So anyway, you know, things change.
As selfless and altruistic, even then.
I mean, they were looking to him. But I mean, Manser is very interesting, just not just on that, but also in dealings with the Republican movement. Like, who are you dealing with? Were you dealing with Sinn Féin or the IRA? He said, well, they're the Republican movement. But he said, I would sometimes take back a document. I would get it from Martin McGuinness.
I love this. Go on.
It would be made clear to me, well, this is from the Army Council or this is from Sinn Féin, okay, as they handed it over. He said there was one occasion he handed me a paper and he didn't say. And I asked him, well, which is this from? But you're going to have to watch the programme to find out.
But the other thing that linked to that that I thought was very interesting was his analysis of whether or not you presented the documents to Haughey. And that the decision about which would he want to be made aware of and which would he not, which
yes,
of course goes
yeah,
to
yeah.
so much of the issues of that time. Do you find yourself, when there are breaking stories, Brian Stanley is case in point this morning, departing from Sinn Féin with in high dudgeon. Do you find yourself thinking, oh, I wish I had a microphone?
At times, yes. That said, if Clare Byrne was somehow run over by the, I perish the thought, the 44 bus... And somebody said, would you go back and do the 5 days a week? That relentless, or as Gay Byrne said to my better half, Caroline, does he realise how relentless it is going to be? I mean, it is absolutely relentless, doing 2 hours live radio. I mean, I loved every minute of it.
Look at Pat. He's like a spring chicken. He sounds like he's 40 and he's doing 3 hours a day.
I know. He's doing more than he ever did before. And, you know, and more luck to him. I met a guy recently in a filling station. He said to me, I'm going to say something to you now. He says, how's retirement going? I says, fine, I'm not fully gone, you know. He says, my father said to me recently, he says, he's 89 years of age, and he said to me recently, his biggest regret in life is that when he retired at 65, he did not realise how young he was. So, you know, if you want to keep going, you can, you know.
Mind weekends, Sean. There's a lad on News Talk who's no use in the weekends. You only have to do 4 hours
but,
a week.
You know, I do. Aside from this, this was a 10-part series, and... like the Oireachtas TV channel is one of these ones that's kind of growing on people. I mean, with the RT hearings last year and the public accounts and the media committee, you know, it was the best live show in a lot of pubs. And
speaking of which, I have to ask you, you obviously had to fall fairly significantly on a very large sword following the attendance at Golfgate and apologised for same at the time. Did you find yourself watching all that emerged from RTE afterwards and thinking, I paid a very high price by comparison to what we now discover was the norm in that organisation?
Well, you know, different strokes, different times. I mean, I remember asking a good friend of mine in RT, or a retired guy, you know, in my situation, you know, what will they do? He says, they'll do what they always do. They'll do what's expedient. And that's what was done in my case. Yeah, it was a big blow. I think under any other director general, the price to be paid, you know, wouldn't have been as severe. That said, I mean, I've come back, I've made a 2-part series for television, documentary series on Civil War politics. It was called Two Tribes. And out of that has grown or have flown the series of interviews that I've done for the podcast Insights, which I do for RTE, and that's continuing. I did one with the Director General, Kevin Backhurst, last week. That's up on the thing. And also from that series, we got the interviews, and that kind of led to this 10-part series I've done. And hopefully, well, you know, all going well, there might be another one. But
were you surprised by what emerged?
What emerged in RTE? Yes, in the sense, well, I'm surprised at how it exploded and the way it did. I mean, I at one stage needed a new mobile phone. I needed to get 7 signatures for it, like the producer of the program, the head of current affairs radio, the head of radio, and then the financial person in radio. I mean, that's bureaucracy for you, right? So, I mean, I don't think whoever they send in there, whether it's the CNAG or whoever, I don't think you're going to find, you know, a lot of mismanaged funds. I mean, I think there were particular aberrations that were done or perpetrated. And, you know, people paid a very heavy price for that. You know, I mean, they got badly kicked around. I think, fine, we needed the hearings. But did you need two Dáil committees? Did you need the punishment beatings that were administered to executives who had served the organisation and the public really, really well? But look, you know, they're in a different place now. There's a new regime. I'm not sure it's a great idea that it's going to be smaller than it was, that it's going to have maybe less scope or less opportunities or a smaller canvas on which to work. But look, that's where we are.
To the most important issue. You and I have discussed this privately, but I want you to nail your colours to the mast publicly. You realise that an air fryer is just a small oven.
Yes, that's why we've got two of them.
Oh, you haven't doubled down, have you? Oh, you haven't.
Well, and funnily enough, I think you would get a better steak.
Oh, don't.
I'm well, not
the rashers. Air fryer, are you?
I'm afraid I did last night and, you know, we dined well.
Really?
Yeah. No, there are some things I wouldn't put in. I wouldn't put prawns in if you want to have surf and turf. But that's another, you know, look, we set up a cookery show, Anton.
I feel that there is a cookbook in this. There is a series. Now, if people want to see, because we've been referring to the Martin Manser, that episode is this Friday, is that right?
No, it's tonight.
Oh, tonight. Oh, very good.
6 p.m. And I think it's going to be repeated tomorrow morning. The exact time, I don't know. But the great thing about that channel is it'll be able to churn these things. And, okay, we're starting off with 10. I personally believe now, I'll be long dead if and when it ever happens, that everybody who serves in Leinster House, be it in the Shannon or in the Dáil, you know, should have the option of doing an exit interview.
Oh, everybody. Everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody.
There's all, look, everybody who gets elected to the Dáil is deserving of respect, I think, just for, first of all, putting their name before the people. I chaired a debate in UCD the other night and there were seven participants and I think, you know, all of them were, you know, deserving. I mean, some of them haven't, you know, there's a guy, but I won't name them all, but there's a candidate who is a barrister, well qualified, probably in his early 30s, living with his parents. Ministers of state, people like that, and others. Like, you know, it takes guts to do that.
But that's interesting. And after covering politics for as long as you have, you haven't become cynical about that. You haven't become dismissive.
You become cynical about certain things. But I mean, actually, as I get older, I think I've become more respectful of the ordinary, hardworking politician doing what he or she does, because by and large, they could do far, far better in material terms outside.
Well, I was reading Lee Kuan Yew's autobiography about the history of Singapore, and Singapore's...
as you would.
Indeed.
As you would.
Their ministerial salaries are based on the top 1,000 earners in Singapore with a 40% discount for public service, which means the ministers are earning £1 million apiece. Extraordinary.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't need to go to that extent, right?
But somewhere in the middle.
Mm. Well, no, sorry, I'm not saying that. That's 500 grand.
Sean, great pleasure to have you in. Thank you so much. And don't forget, that is on this evening on Aratus TV and obviously all of the episodes.
Did I mention 6 o'clock?
You did mention 6 o'clock.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.